With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going, you're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the Publisher Fight. It's time for the Publisher
Fight. Here's a man that really appreciates that new England pound.
Hi, how's it going, and welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood, and I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week. And in this episode, my guest is Arthur Quirou, who is the founder and CEO at Vibe. If you don't know Vibe, they're a fascinating company. I really love Arthur's energy and his ambition. And Vibe have been competing and delivering in one of CTV's hottest spaces, the SME and performance market. Arthur is a French founder who chose to launch in the US, which I think was a smart decision for this type of business. We get into everything from the challenge of working with smaller advertisers and what they got right and what they got wrong with the platform. We discuss the metrics that those advertisers typically want, how to make the platform user-friendly and how you solve things like creative. Let's talk about Vibe's journey as a platform and how they're now working with larger advertisers. And finally, we get into Vibe's decision to go direct to supply. If you're an SSP, you might want to cover your ears for that part. A little bit of housekeeping from us. We've got the video and TV advertising buyer's guide coming up. This will be a new guide aimed at media buyers, so brands and agencies. We want to create a Bible for omnichannel video buying. We know the market very well at this stage. We know the people in the market very well at this stage. And we know that most people have gaps in their knowledge. So the idea is to have a buying Bible, which can help supplement those gaps and give you more of an omnichannel view of what's available on the market. So if you're a media company or an ad tech company, you might want to get involved. We're going to be covering everything from CTV, what online publishers are doing, social video, digital out of home, or even niche areas like gaming. We really want to create something that creates a full picture for media buyers when it comes to all the options. So get in touch if the company would like to be involved. Then from 15th to 16th April 2026, we will be hosting our flagship conference, New Video Frontiers. We're going to be returning to King's Place in London, but this time for 2 full days. So it's going to be bigger and better than ever this year. If you're traveling abroad, you might want to book those flights, or if you'd like to partner with us, you can get in touch via the Video Week website or the New Video Frontiers website. Very much looking forward to this year's New Video Frontiers. Right, now I'll cross over to my conversation with Arthur, and I hope you enjoy. So, Arthur, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Vincent, how are you?
I'm very, very good. So, we've got a little bit of a time constraint issue today, which I think is probably not professional of me to acknowledge. So, I'm going to skip the question about how you first got into the industry, which is something I do sometimes ask. And we'll jump into what is Vibe, because I want to spend the time talking about the company. You're one of my most, I think you're one of the most interesting companies in ad tech right now. And yeah, want to get straight into it. So yeah, tell us, what is Vibe and what were the origins?
Absolutely. So at Vibe, we're known as the Google Ads of streaming TV. So we've created a platform for performance marketers to advertise on streaming TV and generate and measure ROI and performance in general. We believe that unlocking the performance marketers' demand in streaming TV will basically be able to triple the market size of CTV and kind of bringing it to like from 30 billion to 100 billion in that kind of the meta order of magnitude. And we believe that this has to be done through a product-led motion. So that's why we've built like a fully self-serve platform, and we started by going and serving like more SMBs. And now as we've grown, we're serving like much larger enterprise clients as well. So we're really covering the the full spectrum of it. And I think aside of the marketing of the company and being the self-serve platform, what we've really built at Vibe and what we're really building and what we're trying to achieve is really build the monetization layer, the monetization infrastructure for streaming TV. So yeah, that's who we are. That's what we do.
Oh, interesting. So when you say, I mean, my understanding of Vibe is that you're primarily focused on the SME market. Is that still the case?
Partially. That's where we started. That's where, of course, like we've been exceptionally good at penetrating the market. And now there's a lot of expansion. So of course we're massively expanding into the SME market, but we're also expanding into more enterprise AI companies, very large e-com brands, etc. And we've been also penetrating that market very, very quickly, especially in 2025. This has been like really our breakout year. And now we're really taking over the whole market. I would say the only space we're not covering yet is the holdcos and the Fortune 500 brands. I think they're already pretty well served by the Trade Desk, Amazon, DV360. So for now, it's not a priority for us. It's a very different go to market. But aside of that, we work with everyone, and especially now more and more with like those very large companies.
You use the term monetization layer. So are you focusing equally on the sell side? You mentioned, I saw in a recent LinkedIn post by you that they were very much about going direct. Are you bypassing SSPs in that case and plugging directly into supply, or?
We're doing that. A lot of people ask us and tend to think like, oh, you're doing that to cut the costs and cut the fees of SSPs or resellers. Actually, we're not, because the reality, the way our business model works, we don't make more money or less money if the fees change. For us, it's really an efficiency thing. We've seen way too many problems, and we've tried to solve way too many problems and wasting time because of the way the programmatic like ecosystem is built, because of resellers, because of some shady SSPs. There are some SSPs who do an amazing job, and I really want to highlight them. Like Index, for example, come to mind. It's an amazing partner to work with, and we'll continue working with them. And we do we work with like direct deals solely with publishers, so we still remain focused on that. But some are doing a great job, and a lot of SSPs are doing a very, very poor job. So it's just easier for us to just like cut these connections and go direct to publishers, and that also allow us to work on how do we make advertising and TV advertising better. One thing that terrifies me when it comes to streaming TV is that ad tech tends to enshittify everything it touches. When you look at the open web, if you want to go and look for a recipe right now on the open web, it's horrible. The user experience is absolutely horrible. And that's because of the ad tech industry. And there's a big systemic risk for streaming TV right now. It's like, either we go a route where ad tech will push for horrible and like and a massive overwhelming presence of ads and like interactive ads and these kind of things, or we make ads part of the experience, we make ads part of the content, we make ads skippable, we ensure that the relevancy of the ads for the viewers is great, the same way it is on Instagram. And so being direct with publishers allow us to actually work with them on like, okay, how can we improve the experience on your side? It's not just about cramming the experience with ads and just making more money on the short term. It's like, how do we maintain the system, and do we make sure that the streaming TV advertising ecosystem remains like sustainable in the long term? And so, and that's very, very exciting. And that's in that sense that we're building the infrastructure that will allow that.
So at what level on the technology level are you buying? Yeah. Are you plugging in to that supply?
We're plugging to the ad servers now.
Yes. Interesting.
Yeah. We're plugging directly into the ad servers. We're not, willing to like take over like their like waterfall or anything like that, or like take the place of a of ad servers. I don't think we have much value to bring here, and you know, we're not replacing their whole demand as of now. So there's no reason to do that. But being directly integrated into the ad servers like is more than enough to be able to do what we want to do. So yeah.
So over on the buy side, so it's everyone. So it's yeah. I'm just thinking, what portion of your business would be you know, class as an SME, you know, as coming from SMEs? I mean, maybe it might be good to define what an SME is. We have this conversation in the UK a lot now about, you know, is it the local pizza shop, or is it the restaurant chain with 20 branches? Or yeah,
I think there are many ways, but I think it's the great way of approaching that is that first we have to agree on the definition of what is an SME. First of all, there is an S and there is an M. So you're right in what you say. There are actually two categories in SMEs. There are the small businesses. The small businesses are local, independent businesses. They are small apps, small e-com shops, those kind of things. It's people will spend from, you know, a few hundred bucks a month to maybe like $5,000 a month. Like that's what we're talking about, at least in the US. And then like you get into the mid-sized territory where you'll find, you know, more developed, as you said, like small chains of restaurants, small franchises, upcoming e-com brands, upcoming apps, like who start having some kind of a marketing strategy, who start to have marketing people in-house and want to develop through advertising. And so we'll see people like in the US spending like from $5,000, $10,000 to like $100,000 a month. And so that's a pretty wide range. And then you get into the enterprise when you're like above $100,000. And they come with like very different expectation and stacks as well, technical stacks when it comes to measurement, to data onboarding, to this kind of thing. And they can spend $100,000 a month up to like millions a month. So yeah.
So and you know, what type of advertiser gets the most value from Vibe? And you know, and are there others who maybe shouldn't be actually be buying TV? You know, in spite of the fact that, you know, maybe it's more of the CEO's ego driving the decision to advertise on TV.
Yeah, the one thing our sales team like is briefed on that. The small, you know, like people who do not advertise already, they should not use Vibe. Vibe should not be the first thing that you activate. I think you should go on Google. You should go on Meta first. It's easier. And because TV has that like massive power of improving your brand recognition and improving your trustworthiness, especially in local. So people should be an added thing. But then when you scale, TV really has the potential of unlocking around like 30% of your marketing budget. So it's the very small ones like doesn't really work. But aside of that, I think we've done a really great job at serving like that S tier, especially when it comes to like helping them on the measurement side and understanding like how that works, what they should target, etc. And then especially that's what I said in 2025, the team has made an amazing work at developing features and a lot of integrations to really integrate into the more enterprise size clients marketing stack and really like talking their language. And so integrating with their CDPs, with their measurement solution, with their CRMs. And you know, the fun thing, because we're an ad tech company in a way, but we don't work much with ad tech solutions, and these people do not work with ad tech solutions. So like, you know, they don't use Adobe Marketing Cloud, they don't use like these kind of like classic stuff that you would see, or Nielsen to measure. They'll use like Segment to onboard data. They'll use HubSpot. They'll use Norse Beam and Triple Whale when it comes to measurement. And so it's a very different ecosystem, but it's a great ecosystem where people want to make things work and really assess the value of things by the actual output and the actual revenue and ROI that they are getting. So it's ruthless. You have no room for, you can't jiggle around your results. It's either good or it's either bad. But we've been able to demonstrate that the results are exceptionally good, and hence the growth that we've seen over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's almost like a rule of business that the smallest customers have the highest expectations. Often because that investment, it's a big deal to them, and their hopes and dreams are resting on that investment.
That's what I love the most. To be honest, like when we have like a car dealership that comes to us and say like, I'm gonna invest like $5,000 this month. And it's not. I used to work with the holdcos, and we'd work with like, I don't know, Samsung, and they tell us like, oh, we're gonna give you a campaign of $300,000. They could not care less about the result. They were like, yeah, like it's just a line in the Excel at the end, and it's mostly based on the relationship that you have with them. I mean, the dealership that's investing $5,000, its money is not using for his kids or these people. So they care a lot. So that gives us a massive responsibility to deliver results. And when they come back to us and say, oh, I had like much more clients like coming to the dealership and telling me they saw us on TV and blah, 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 they're super happy. We're super happy. And that makes us proud. So yeah, that's really what I love the most.
Yeah, I'm always saying this. I've probably said it on the podcast as well, but I'm still not really seeing local ads on my TV, and I think I will jump off the couch as soon as there's a local restaurant that I recognize or don't recognize, and it's just somewhere that's down the road. And I think that alone, regardless of the creative quality, I think just the local relevance is going to make the sort of campaigns so impactful.
It's all about, I mean, the future of TV advertising is all about relevancy. I think that's what people tend to forget a lot. And that's exactly what you say. That's why local advertising is so exciting. It's about relevancy. It's about, you said it like that, you would jump out of your chair because you'd be super excited to see that, because at that moment, the ads become the content. And that's you're completely changing the paradigm when that happens, and I think that's great for the whole industry if anyone can make that happen, and that's what we're working on. So yeah.
So it sounds like the product's evolved a lot then since we last spoke. So when we first spoke, you could list off some of the your first investors and advisors. You've got some big names from the video world in there.
We have quite a lot of really cool investors. We've raised our last round in the middle of the year. It was announced in September. But we now have, so in the cool like names that we have, Caroline Everson is one of the person I'm really proud to have alongside us. So Caroline was the kind of right hand of Sheryl Sandberg at Meta. So she really understands our play. She really gets what we're trying to do. She sits at the board of both Coke and Disney, so she's really aware of that, and that helps us a ton to have her help and have our vision and also her ambition alongside us. At the board of Vibe sitting, we have the CEO of Nextdoor as well, so which is a big like public listed company here in the US. So that also really helps us kind of get out of the ad tech box. Again, I've been repeating that like I think already a couple times now in this episode, but I think that's very important that ad tech kind of outgrows itself and realize the potential that what the whole industry has, and if you do things well. And so that's something we're focusing a lot on. So having these kind of investors, and of course, Ido Sophia, really helps. And then we have like our historical backers. So Ari Paparo, we have Benjamin Antier as well. So the, the founder and CEO of ex-founder and CEO of Publica, and quite a few other names. So yeah, we have a good roster around us, and then some CEOs of big listed companies and this kind of thing, who are some good friends. So yeah, it's a good roster.
Yes, yeah, incredible. But what I quite liked about your the initial approach, certainly with in going to market with SMEs, was that you were kind of resisting the temptation to include all the bells and whistles that come with ad tech and can actually often create a clunky experience. I mean, probably, you know, good in the hands of a sophisticated trader, but for the average SME, I just love, you know, that you were just focused on keeping it simple, and I love that in the fact that you
what's fun. I mean, when you look at Reddit, and there's a bit of salt around Vibe sort of time, because like a lot of people are saying that like SMEs should not advertise on TV, that it doesn't work, and what's really fun is, and I do agree, in you know, in a sense, like it's bloody hard like to make it work at that scale. But as we've provided them a platform where they can spend like $50 a day and then like be hyper localized, yeah, if you spend $50 a day and go nationwide, I mean, you might as well just burn the money. Like it has no point. But when you start being like hyper localized plus hyper targeted, you start being able to do like some really cool stuff as a small business. And one thing that like really makes me super angry when I hear some ad tech people talk about SMBs is that they think they are dumb. They are absolutely not dumb. People do not realize how competitive local businesses are. Like, because you know, when you're a plumber, when you're an HVAC company, and you're in a like mid-sized city, the competition is like, it's wild. Like it is absolutely unleashed. And so like being able for them to advertise on TV and build some brand recognition and trustworthiness, like it's highly strategic. And they measure it because people talk to them. They talk to their customers and people tell them like, I saw you on TV. That's their measurement stack. The small businesses, their measurement stack is people telling them, I saw you on TV. And we are driving these results. And the simple way we can prove it is just like the net dollar retention that we're seeing. Like these people stay, these people keep spending every week, every month, and they stay on the platform because they are seeing the results. So I'm proud of that. I can understand that there is like doubt and like around these topics, like is TV like relevant for these clients? But yes, it is. It's very exciting.
Yes, I think I've seen a bit of that salt. Wasn't there something around churn, and oh, you know, is there going to be a high churn for this type of business? And it's more, you know,
investors are very happy. So,
yeah. I mean, in all honesty, you know, it was one of my big. You know, I was surprised that, you know, obviously TV advertising was effective, but in coming from a digital background initially into the TV world, and you would meet these what were digital first advertisers, and just the huge impact that TV drove for them. And it was hard to get your head around because people were still very much around, oh, well, you know, digital has all the data and the targeting and the geo and all the rest of it. And they just couldn't believe the way their numbers lit up with often, you know, very primitive targeting in TV. Just this is, you know, even 10 years ago.
When it's operated the right way, we've seen results that are absolutely insane. And I'm not, not measured by us, measured by independent, like third party measurement solutions like Northbeam, like Triple Whale, which are like the major and most respected measurement platforms in, for example, in the e-com world. And they are showing that like when properly executed, Vibe can deliver like results on par with Meta. So yeah. And I'm not the one measuring it. I'm not the one, like we're just operating the campaign. They're the one doing the measurement, but the impact TV advertising can have is absolutely massive, like massive. But there are lots of, it's not easy though. Like the creative is very important. The targeting is massively important. The making sure that you're buying the right supply is massively important, and not getting frauded, which is extremely hard. The fraud state of CTV is ridiculous. It is mind-blowing how big the fraud is right now on CTV. So making sure that you are not buying fraud is a lot of work. So yeah, it has many challenges, but when it's done and executed properly, it's wild.
And is where's most of the fraud coming from, in your opinion, in your experience? Is it the more open market stuff, or is there, have you sort of identified any sort of
The main thing, definitely the open market. To be honest, I would not buy a single impression on the open market right now. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's so many spoofing of vendor IDs, of publisher IDs, of it's wild. So you have that. One is you have resellers, and I will call them shady SSPs. Sorry about that. Again, there are some really great one. Shout out again to Index, Free Will, all these people. But yeah, there are some very shady SSPs that I don't think they sell fraud, but they are absolutely not. I mean, it's not like they're pushing for it, but they're really not trying to solve the issue. And I can't believe that they don't know. And with some of them, we've told them, we've showed them this is fraud, and they did not act on it. So there is a lot of malpractice from SSPs and resellers. So yeah, there's a lot in there, and there's a lot of spoofing and this kind of thing. So that's one thing. So you have to make sure that you have certified supply, that you're buying directly from the source. That's mandatory right now. And the other thing, there is another source of fraud, which is device spoofing. There's a lot of fake devices. So even when you buy directly from a publisher, you will get exposed to fraud. You will get exposed to fraud because there's just so many devices that there's no way they're real devices. And anyhow, the volumes do not add up. Some publishers have volumes that absolutely do not add up to real world consumption. And so what we've done, for example, at Vibe, is that we've built our own identity graph. So now we solely buy from devices and people in a household we know are real people, because we have information about them. We're tracking them off TV, and so you need to have a very reliable and very robust identity solution to make sure that you're only buying from real people. And it's especially important on TV, because the measurement is measured through incrementality. And so when it comes to incrementality, if you're buying fake people, basically you're basically wasting money. So you want to make sure you're not. So both identity and supply are the two main thing that you want to make sure you're buying real stuff.
So what typically are you using for identity then?
Yeah, so we've built our own identity graph. I don't think there is one solution that really works. And I don't think a major player in the CTV space can just rely on one solution. So we've built our own, it's basically called the Vibe ID Graph. We build it through several things. One, we do pattern analysis on the behavior of the device we see. So, a device that has been always on for 3 days and is asking for a bid request all day, it's not a real device. There's a really high probability that there's no one in front of that TV. So that's the kind of thing we ban. And then we also work with data providers on that front. And as I was saying, we were talking about that before the episode, but we work solely direct as well with data providers. So we don't work with data brokers at all. And we work directly with people who can provide us some information about emails, about phone numbers, about phone numbers, household addresses, et cetera, et cetera. And so far, it's been proving to be very reliable. There's a ton more that we want to do on that front, and also like getting more data points and these kind of things. But we're very, very bullish, and I think we've made the right decision to go that way. So yeah, and of course we use also the UID2, ID5 stuff. So yeah.
And then on the measurement side, how are you typically measuring it? And I'm curious about the metrics that a small advertiser is interested in.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I think there's when people talk about measurement, there are two aspects of it. There is the measurement and there is the attribution, which are two different things. When it comes to the measurement, we basically use our ID graph to measure. So our advertisers have, we have, for example, an integration with CallRail that allows to track phone calls which are made on a phone number that was on an ad. We have our own pixel, so we're doing all that. We're doing all that on the platform side. So in there, people will be able to track everything. That means like visit, cost per lead, the number of leads, the revenue they're generating, the number of sales, et cetera, et cetera. Some people will be looking for sales. Some people will be looking for more visits. You know, it's really the same like campaign goals as what you see on Meta. And the reality is like most of our clients are Meta advertisers. So it's they're happy to find some kind of like a correlation between the goals that they can deliver and target. But we're not doing deduplication when we're doing that because we don't know the budgets they are spending on Meta. We don't know the budget they are spending on other platforms. So we can't do like deduplication. So that's why we're always pushing them for the largest ones because it comes at the cost to use also third-party measurement. And that's why we work with all these companies like the Norse Beam, Triple Whale, WorkMagic, House, etc. To make sure that they can measure and have like an independent view of the results that we're delivering. Because you know we're not looking at our clients like, so there is no commitment, there is no minimum spend or this kind of thing. So our best interest is to make sure that they have really good understanding and trust in the results that they are seeing from us. And that means that third-party measurement is the best way of doing that. And third-party attribution is the best way of doing that. So they look at everything. And as I was saying, the smallest clients, they'll be looking at basically people telling them, like, I saw you on TV. And that's really what matters for them. Whereas the very large advertisers, they will look at incremental sales, incremental clients. Incrementality is basically the main keyword in the enterprise world as of right now.
And yeah, I can very much relate to the small business, the owner's intuition, or anyone working in the company about what is and isn't working. Where yeah, it's very noticeable. Like you pick up on when sales pick up.
To be honest, optimizing for people will tell like that they saw them on TV. It is hard. It's so much easier to optimize for incremental ROI when everything is tracked properly and everything than track for like people telling them I saw you on TV. And that's where you want to be hyper strict on the quality of supply you are buying and the robustness of your ID graph, because you have no room for fraud or inefficiency in there. Because I mean, when they spend $50 a day, I mean, it's pretty much like 2,000 impressions. So in 2,000 impressions, you need, and they want results like in 3 days, like, or they are stopping. So, and we can't do any account management because we have thousands of them. So the challenge is like, we are not allowed to fuck it up. And yeah, it's it's really fun to work on that.
Interest, incredibly interesting. And I love the fact that you've embraced this challenge. I mean, even in display, you know, which is, you know, the barriers around creative are so much lower, and yet, you know, and the infrastructure has been there for many years to make it work. But I know that so few people would touch the SME market. I think it was Adroll. I hope I'm not getting that wrong. If you're from Adroll, please let me know if I need to correct myself. But I think that they were one of the few companies who really went after it outside of Google and Meta, and really, I think they had a call center in Dublin, actually. And I just loved the fact that they went after this difficult market and made a success of it. It's stepping into the waters that others aren't willing to step into. It's very brave, and I salute you in your efforts. But how do you find the customers in the first place? What's a typical method of acquisition?
Marketing. We're a product company, so we're starting to have like massive marketing budgets now, in the tens of millions a year, and so it's gross marketing. I mean, that's the cool stuff. We are gross marketers ourselves. Vibe is actually one of the biggest channels of Vibe acquisition stack. So that's pure dog fooding, and it's great because that allows us to be frustrated about the platform as well sometime, and understand like what our clients are going through. But yeah, we do all kind of marketing. So like pure performance marketing, on Vibe, on LinkedIn, on Meta, on Google, on pretty much anything we can think of. We have lots of like also, non-paid, initiatives when it comes to emailing, etc. And we tend to do as well, like some, like we tend to have a pretty, I would qualify it as a wild, marketing. We're doing like some fun stuff. Like we're doing now more and more of out of home as well. And we got a lot of coverage from a billboard we've put on the 101 highway. So in San Francisco, where we put the forehead of one of the biggest investors in the Valley, Mark Andreessen. And we just said like target Mark on TV. And that got a lot of attention. We tend to make fun stuff and have fun in the process. And then we have a whole go-to-market team that really engineers that machine. It's heavily inspired by the work that Monday.com has done and Ramp.com has done. And there is like a crazy routing system that routes to the right people based on people on the company size, because we're serving like so many different people. You don't sell the same way to a car dealership than you sell to OpenAI. So, you know, you're not going to tell OpenAI, hey, it starts at $50 a day. They don't care. Yeah. That's not what they'll be looking for. So you need to be able to route, and the volume as well makes it a challenge. Like it's well over 100 companies that come to us every day to advertise with us. And so yeah, there is a volume game that is highly challenging. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating.
It just occurred to me that we haven't spoken about creative yet. AI creative is very much at the heart of this, I'd imagine.
I might be like counterintuitive on that.
Yeah.
I don't think it is Vibe's role to be on the ad creative side. Here is my thinking. When you look at the monetization layers, like the Google, the Meta, Uplovin, they are not really getting, they never really got into in there, because the reality is that it is an endless and unsolvable problem when you're thinking about the larger clients. There's always going to be a solution that's better than whatever you could like develop yourself. Like enterprise clients will use, and especially now with Gen AI, I mean, they're like Gen AI geniuses, like working on crazy like video production tools. And it's evolving like on a weekly basis, literally, or even like on a daily basis. And so we'd rather partner with the people who are winning that race, you know, with the Higgsfield, et cetera, and rather than like developing that ourselves. And then there's definitely the SMB side of things. For them, definitely being able to provide them with a tool is critical. It reduces the friction of activation on TV. We developed our own tool, and it's been a massive success. Like 20% of the businesses were using that to like run ads on TV. So it was working well, but there's just so much that we have to do that we don't believe that that's where we're gonna have the biggest impact. And I think there are companies that are doing like some really cool stuff. I'm thinking, for example, of Streamer.ai. Like they are doing cool stuff. Like it, and the quality of what they are doing is great. So yeah, I'd rather much like now like work with these kinds of companies rather than building it ourselves. Like we have so much to build in the infrastructure, on the identity graph, on the recommendation engine, on like all the initiatives that we're working on the supply side, on the integrations and the partnerships that we're doing. So, you know, like the creative, I think creative always becomes a commodity. People do not want to spend money on creative. They want to spend money on media. It's sad. My opinion is that it's sad, but I can't change everything all at once. So that's just the way it is. And we'll much rather partner than like build on that front.
So you are, of course, a French founder who chose to launch in the US. And I think for what you were doing, I think that was a very smart move. We won't go down the geopolitics rabbit hole. but I think it's the perfect market for you to go into, large, wealthy, monolingual. But is this scalable outside of the US, do you think?
So there are other things that Europe outside of the US. So I think LATAM has a lot of potential. I think, of course, Canada has a lot of potential. We might naturally expand to Greenland. So So definitely like North America and the full North America and South America is an interesting market. Europe is a tough one, and I'll include UK in the EU, but it is so fragmented in terms of course, countries, in terms of supply, because like each country has its own networks. These networks are usually like, you know, there's not a lot of competition. It's like 1-3 networks, something like that. And also the small mid-sized businesses, they don't have much money, to be honest, to invest in there. So I think for us, we'll expand one day. But I'd much rather win first in the US and, you know, be at like a 5-10 billion like run rate there and absolutely dominate the market here, and then like step into Europe and take over, rather than be distracted trying to make it work in Europe. So yeah. And then there's Asia. I don't know much to be, I'll be very transparent, or I don't know enough to be talking about it. It's something that I look at a lot more now. I think there's definitely a lot of interesting stuff. So yeah, you know, like so, Asia is very interesting.
What is your run rate? I say that I already have a good idea, but it's very impressive. I mean, from what date did you start the company?
So we started in January of 2023. We launched the product in January of 2023. So that means like exactly 3 years ago. And now we are nearing very quickly the 200 million run rate. We ended the 2025 year at 164 million run rate. And yeah, we've been growing double digit since the first day of the company every month, and it's absolutely not slowing down. I think that's the cool thing once you really break in into that SME market and enterprise market, and once you've proven that you can deliver the value, so meaning that you can retain a client and grow clients, plus that you have built a machine that allows you to go to market very, very aggressively, it just compounds. So it compounds and you start seeing that kind of hooky stick curve that you're willing to see. We were making like a comparison recently, but the only other ad tech company that was able to scale at that, like at that pace, and took like 12 and a half years to get to 100 million in run rate, which is like pretty much the same as what we did, is Uplovin. And I think that shows like, you know, like it's the hardest market to break into. But when you break into it, like the potential is massive. So the reward is big as well.
And I think you'll have, I mean, it's great. It's just great to see a truly a hot space. I mean, CTV generally is still quite hot, but I feel like this portion of CTV, the fact that if it's new money, I think makes it extra exciting. It's incremental in terms of what we're seeing in the TV world. Pinterest acquired TV Scientific a few months ago. I'm curious about your thoughts on what Pinterest moves are likely to be.
Yeah. Oh, it's pretty clear. So first of all, kudos and hats off to the team at TV Scientific. I mean, they have been
great people. Yeah.
Yeah, great people. They have been. I mean, they were great competitors. They're bad competitors and they're good competitors. I think TV Scientific was building the right thing on the way they were approaching like performance. I think they fully deserve that beautiful exit. We're on a very different track, and I mean, Vibe's goal is not to be sold. I know some people like in the industry say like, oh, they want to sell, blah, blah, blah. No. Vibe's game plan is 20 year long. So, and we've had so many people like try to acquire us and come to us for that, and we've always closed doors. So it's really not a goal for us. But seeing TV Scientific the Pinterest TV Scientific deal is great. The goal is pretty simple, and I think this is a trend that we'll be seeing more and more. They're, I would call, mega platforms as Pinterest, which have like ad capabilities. You know, like there is an ad platform inside of Pinterest, and all these platforms are kind of looking at expanding their capabilities outside, so off-site, outside of their own inventory. And for Pinterest, I mean, they have a lot of transactional data, or not transactional data, but intent and interest data, and they believe they can they can leverage that to basically build a cool offering on CTV as well. I think it's a strong move, definitely, and I think Pinterest has all the rights to go and claim like a portion of the ecom money that's going to flow there through their data. But I think we're going to see more and more very large platforms that want to expand, and we'll be looking to get that. And I think Vibe is going to be that's also why, like, I mean, as we're not building just a platform. We're known as a platform we're known as a product, but we're building a platform. So we're really building the infrastructure of streaming TV and performance on streaming TV. And as like these mega platforms are going to look into like expanding their ad capabilities outside of their own inventory and in CTV, we'll be happy to provide them the infrastructure and the access to the infrastructure as well for that. So yeah, that's for us going to be that was already a big topic for us that just like confirms that. And I think the joint forces of Pinterest and TV Scientific will lead to a cool product, but it's a different story, and I don't think we'll compete much from there on.
Final question is, okay, if I was to give you 10 million to invest, you can't pump it into your own company or put it into a savings account. You had to invest it today. Where would you invest that money and why? It could be a company, it can be a space that interests you.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good question. I actually have an investment activity on the side of Vibe, so I can be quite opinionated on that. There are a few stuff. I think ad tech is a tough one. There are a few people I would invest on in ad tech, but it's more I would invest on people rather than on the space itself. The issue with ad tech is that it tends to drive like returns like that are like not the best returns, like, you know, like so even if you pick massive winner, like it might exit to like 200, 300 million. And it's usually, and the valuation are still quite high even when it's early. So it's, and the time to money is usually quite long. So I'm not always the biggest like bullish guy, but there are some amazing entrepreneurs in there. Some of the best in the world, I think. And so that's who I would tend to back. I don't want to disclose because I don't know how public they are on that, but there are some cool stuff. For example, on the agentic front, I think agentic media buying like is going to take over. Like, there's absolutely no reason it could not. And there are a lot of companies who are trying to work on that. I think most of them are pretty bad, and I think they're really not taking the right approach when it comes to that. But there's one, and from a founder I know really well, I think is taking the right approach. So I'm currently backing them. And then there are quite a few stuff. I think cybersecurity, and especially LLM cybersecurity, is a massive, massive, massive topic. There are lots of some of the like most brilliant brains in the world are currently like starting to work on that like very heavily. So that's something I'm very, very excited about. That's one of the biggest thing I'm looking at right now. Defense, I think, is a big one. I know some people are not comfortable investing in that field, but I think that's where some of the most exciting stuff is happening right now. I don't know like about the returns that these companies will really get, because like exiting a company in the defense sector is like not easy, not at all, because of regulations and this kind of stuff. But defense is very exciting. And then like, of course, there's a lot of AI. I think when looking at AI companies now, it's about what's the moat. Like, are they going to get absolutely wiped by OpenAI and Anthropic in the coming months, because they are coming and they're eating the world. So it's a very dangerous place to be in right now.
It almost applies to anything software related, where what's your, like on a technology level, what's your moat? I think your moat is often, you know, your customers. People say data is a big differentiator, but equally data, it's still acquirable.
I'm a big believer in infrastructure, because I think it's going to be a massive trend that we're going to see. The issue that there is like with agentic and LLMs and all this kind of thing, is that they're going to pretty much take over everything that is operational. Like, anything that is operational is going to be done by an AI in the future. There's no reason why media traders would still like set up campaigns in a DSP or in an ad platform. Like,
yeah.
Why? And same goes, like, when it comes to, like, you know, the budget, like the finance side of things, procurement, anything will be taken over by that. But to be able to do stuff, LLMs need infrastructures. They cannot come up with infrastructure, whether it is in finance, whether it is in advertising, whether it is in healthcare, whether it is in anything. So these LLMs need infrastructure. They need not only data. Data is a big part of it, but they need connection. They need the right pipes. They need the right communication. And I think we're going to see a lot of infrastructure that are going to be completely rebuilt from the ground up, AI compatible day one, and that's where I think there is a lot of value and a lot of moat to be built through software.
Interesting. I know you're under pressure for time, but I'll let you jump off. We're already overrunning, but such a pleasure and such an interesting chat. Yeah, thanks so much, Arthur. Take care.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Vincent. Bye-bye.